Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, and newcomers, welcome in to a brand new episode of Artsy Farsi Immigrants. Guys, this is going to be an interesting episode because it's more about like my personal life and everything. It's a little bit separate from the work, but everything's, you know, it's positive. The vibes are good. I'm happy. But I also wanted to like, you know, set it up as like less of a work talk and more of a me talk thing. So if that's what you're into, you're going to have a good episode. If you're not into that and you want to talk more about work, well, the last two episodes are a part one and a part two about my stand-up comedy tour, the Prince of Germany tour. Straight up out of the gate, if you want to support this channel, please go to the show notes. There is a link to order my book, The Prince of Germany. It's one book is in English and in German. It's a Wendebuch for the Germans out there. So you can read it in German, flip it over, or you can read it in English. This is going to be a funny episode because I'm going to talk about what life is like a little bit as a person who's made a career in being an immigrant in a different country, like being an expat in a different country. And now that the like biggest part of my job, the tour, is over and the book is out, what these, you know, last few weeks have looked like, including my birthday. So I do have to talk about that. I do have to talk about my birthday. So let's just jump right into it. This is going to sound a bit random. I have picked up some new hobbies. it's not that I'm not working at all, but it's just a funny thing in the sense of now that this incredibly, you know, taxing but fulfilling tour has commenced, which I believe is the British word for ended, I am in a really interesting position where I'm kind of waiting for my editor to make the full video, which, by the way, I told him it's my my deadline would be like mid-December. I want to have it out for the Christmas break. So the tour that I just did will be a free-to-watch full like 60 to 70 minute YouTube special on my channel. If you're not subscribed to me on YouTube, go in the show notes, you dirty dogs, and subscribe so you get notified immediately when my new special is out. So with that out of the way, it's a really interesting moment in my life where I spent so many months, you know, working on this book. And the book's out, by the way. Go get the book. I'm going to stop promoting now, I promise. Plugging, whatever. When the book's out. So I spent so many months working on that and then, like, working on promotion for it. And the promotion, the marketing will still continue on, you know, as long as I can do it. And then also the tour, you know, going to Frankfurt, Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Vienna, canceling Innsbruck because I was in the hospital, doing a double show in Munich, which is the one that we're editing now for the special, and then doing Zurich, Zurich. You know, it was a big job. And so like now that the tour is done and the book is done, it's just a lot to sort of digest. And I'm in a really funny position, not in a bad way, but an interesting position emotionally, where now, because of the free time, I'm part of that free time is going into house chores, which is like aces, cool. It's like, oh, raking leaves, sick. Going to the Vegetalhof, the dump, awesome. So fun. Oh, did you guys know that, like, you can go to the dump and put the cardboard in this dumpster, but like actually they have another whole dumpster for styrofoam, dude. Fucking crazy, dude. It sucks. It's just like life stuff, right? It's like washing a plate with a with steel, what's it called, like a steel wool or whatever, like this clump where you're just like scraping that dried piece of undercooked chicken that stayed out overnight, caked in ketchup. You're like, krunk, 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 and you have to get your fingernails in there. There's like life work, right? Then there's the other part where it's like, I need things to fulfill my brain, because if I am not working, I will fall into the abyss forever. If I don't have things to keep my brain busy, I will literally turn into the Joker. I will be like, chaos is perfect for this city. I'm not that depressed. I'm not depressed at all. But I do need to keep my hands, keep my brain busy. So I've fallen into two extraordinarily uncool habits. So if this is where you guys want to stop the recording because you're going to think, well, I have this image of Jordan that's at least over the 50% mark of cool-ish approval, I would understand. I feel like I've earned that, and I'm grateful for you. And if you want to stop there, yeah, thanks for being here, and hope you have a great day. For those who linger on, you're about to either love me more or think, wow, this is the biggest loser I've ever heard of in my life. And you know what? I am. So there's two hobbies I've become extraordinarily obsessed with, and there's no cool way to say it. One is, damn it, dude. One is sleight of hand magic. Okay, I said it. I put it out there. Thanks, guys, for supporting me as long as you did. And, you know, Godspeed. And, yeah, I won't post about it on my socials other than this podcast. So please continue to follow me. And I love you. And thank you. And bye. For those that lingered on, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? No. Sleight of hand magic has become a massive interest to me. I mean, I'm so glad I didn't get into this as a virgin, because I would be sitting here as a 35-year-old virgin if I did. I would be like, you know what, guys? Actually, having sex with girls is kind of stupid. And actually, it distracts you from perfecting your technique when you do a double lift. When you're palming a card, actually push the girls away, because it distracts you from the trick, the technique. I'm so glad that I didn't find an interest in this as like a teenager. I am actually holding a deck of cards right now, and I'm very thankful as well that this is currently not a video podcast, because I would just watch the subscribers, you know, soar down to zero if they could see me right now. But the thing is, you know, for longtime listeners, you know, I was officially by doctors diagnosed with ADHD this year in Germany, which means something. It means they don't F around. They don't take that, you know, they don't play with their medicine. So they're like, no, you got it, dog. And I think I've realized in the last few months that I've always had an interest in sleight of hand magic, you know, just like, you know, oh, this card, oh, how did that get there? It's always been a little lame, but also a little interesting, like how they do it. But what I've grown to love about getting into this hobby in the downtime after this tour and book is actually just keeping my hands busy, if that makes sense. You know, I mean, it sounds dumb. It sounds really like, keeping your hands busy. My God, dude, gonna jump. But it's really like that. Like, there's something about the pleasure of unison. Oh God, this sounds so stupid. It sounds like I just got nominated for like a Golden Globe, and I'm like, you know, the artistry of the actor is all about dissecting the character. It sounds like garbage, dude. I'm just saying, it's nice to keep my hands busy. Sounds also gross when I say it like that. It's just nice to like fidget with cards. It's nice. It just feels fulfilling. So I'm going to leave it there. So you shut up. You're wrong. You're weird. Not me. Anyway, and I was very thankful that for my recent birthday, as of this recording, was 5 days ago. And now I'm 28 years old. And I'm feeling it, brother. No, I'm ancient, man. I'm Gandalf. I'm 35. And I know Moritz and Mom are listening like, ancient. this is where it starts. This is where the descent into darkness begins. This is where I start turning into like Sauron, you know, like Gandalf the Grey, like spinning this ancient man around a castle. It's 35 hits hard, man. 35 hits hard. I was like looking recently at pictures of who's the actor from Frasier? Oh man. Frasier actor is Kelsey Grammer. I was looking at pictures of I wasn't looking up Kelsey Grammer, to be fair. I stumbled across images of Kelsey Grammer and Steve Martin at ages like 33 and like 35. And they looked 58 minimum. They looked 58 minimum. So, you know, I'm grateful that I do think these days people who, like, there is like a sense of youth that lingers a bit longer. Like, back in the day, everyone's like sat in cigarette smoke all the time. You know, like, everyone was just covered in cigarette smoke, and like everyone like was either in like Vietnam or Korea or it was a weird time. So I don't judge when people looked older, you know, back in the day, because it was just, you know, that was another one. Ben Stiller's dad, Jerry Stiller, you know, famously, I mean, he was George Costanza's dad in Seinfeld. He was also Leah Remini's father in King of Queens. Just one of the most genius comedic performers of all time. One of my absolute comedy heroes. Rest in peace. I saw a picture of him at like 32. And he looked the same way that he does in King of Queens, man. He was blessed with good hair, but he looked old. I don't really know what the point is I'm trying to make here, but it all comes back to me just feeling really, really ancient. Anyway, you can hear me shuffling cards, which I immediately realize is so lame. Anyway, so I turned 35 recently, okay, I'm going to tell you about two more lame things, and then I'm going to go into the cool story about where I was for my birthday. The other lame thing that I've gotten into after the book and tour, besides sleight of hand magic, aka female repellent, is actually, this is even worse. This is worse somehow. It's like adult coloring book. Oh my God. The words came out and I almost vomited. It's adult coloring book. It's just like keeping my, I listen better, I engage better when my hands are busy. Sorry. It just is the way that it is. And a few years ago, I would say almost like 3 years ago by now, I'm not really sure, Moritz, longtime listener, good friend, Binder, gave me like this weird, I mean, I love it to death. I'm using it right now. But he gave me this like horror coloring book. So like every image is a strange, you know, like a zombie or a ghost or something weird. Because Moritz, he gave me that. It was a very thoughtful gift, actually. I regret that I haven't used it until now, but now I have the perfect reason to use it. He gave me that because he knows that I love really scary, intense video games. Really scary video games and scary movies. And it's so not his thing that one time I was trying to show him something from a scary game, and he was like, Jordan, we're friends, so I feel safe telling you this without knowing that, like, you're not going to get mad at me. But no, stop showing me this. I'm not interested. It's too much for me. And I was like, oh my God, thank you for telling me. Oh my God, of course, it's over. Don't worry. No, it's done. But he knows I love it so much that he gave me this coloring book. And I liked every picture so much, but I never really had an excuse to sit down with these pencils to use it. You know what I mean? I almost wanted to have it as like a keepsake, like untouched forever in a sense. But now I bought these, I bought this cool thing of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Ooh, it's 80 markers. Wow. I bought this thing of 80 like pastel markers, and it's just for me. It's just down here in the basement. That sounds wrong, but it's just, you know, it's just for this. And now I'm coloring every page of this spooky coloring book, and I just love it. You know, when you get the right markers and you get the right vibe, the texture, you get the right feel. Anyone who occasionally enjoys coloring or drawing gets exactly what I mean. I'm someone who has drawn cartoons or, you know, comic book stuff as far back as I can remember, as soon as I learned how to draw. So for me, this is really cool to get back into that. It's a healthy, nice, tactile habit that involves, you know, it's kind of relieving for the mind, but also keeping the hands busy. And it's cool. I like it. And this coloring book is really cool. So anyway, that was horrendously off topic. So I've been doing that. I've been coloring and I've been learning sleight of hand card tricks. So watch out, ladies. Here I come. So now I can talk about my birthday. I was in Paris for the very first time ever. For the first time ever. I had never, ever, ever been there. And it was just so unreal. I guess I should have assumed. But I didn't know that literally every single person, doesn't matter the gender, doesn't matter the race, every single person is so good looking. Like every 90-year-old grandpa, all the way down to like, I mean, let's say like, I don't know, 18. I mean, I'm saying good looking in a healthy way here. Like even like the 18, 19, 20, 21, whatever, like the 20s, right? Like everybody is just so cool looking. It's like separate from anything attractive. It's just like cool. You just look cool. It's like a cool painting, a cool movie poster, a cool book cover, a cool song that you hear on the radio where you're like, oh, that was cool. What was that? It's unbelievable to me. How stylish and interesting and how everyone sort of has this borderline foundational understanding of how to dress that isn't phony. Like no one seemed to be dressing for the sake of performative, like to be performative, to dress for others. Everyone seemed to dress in such a pure way that amplified their own identity. And that's something I just don't see a lot of. Not to say, like, I mean, I traveled all over Germany for this tour. And of course, there are numerous, like, just endless amounts of incredibly stylish people. I mean, my God, go to Berlin. It's insane. But imagine like Berlin or London or New York just on crack cocaine. Like it was so overwhelming. I had this back and forth where I was like, oh, wow, this like it was really crazy. It was like diner owners, guys coming out with like scarves and stylish glasses and like everything was just so over the top, perfect looking. It almost felt like Truman Show. Or I was like, oh my God, is this all for me? It was really, really, really amazing. Yeah, like garbage men looked cool. You know what I mean? Like they trimmed and like hemmed their garbage suits. Not literally, but it just seemed like every person had the vibe. They got the memo. You know what I mean? And I was really just so blown away. That was like one of my, honest to God, like, yes, I saw the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre. Thank you. And saw the Notre Dame and whatever, where the Hunchback lives. And like, despite all that, like, despite how breathtaking all of that was and how cool the city is I mean, it was really, really, really a beautiful experience to see that city. There's nothing, nothing like that city. I can only mildly compare it to Rome, which is just different. They're just too different. They're different, but they're like cities that if they said, a free trip to revisit, where would you choose? I would have a tough time. So they're both just so special to me, Rome and Paris. God, I sound like such a troglodyte, like pretentious yacht owner or whatever. It just all boils down to, I could not believe that a city can not only look like it looks, but that it offers what it offers, and that the people look the way that they do. Because usually you have to kind of roll the dice on things, you know? You have to kind of roll the dice on, well, it looks nice, but the food's crap. Or like, the people look cool, but there's not much to do. At least in my experience, as the uncultured swine who runs this podcast. But this Paris, there's only a few cities that ever like reach all the requirements. And it's like New York, London, Paris, and for sure Rome. Like, I think I would say Roman, for me, I mean, this is going to maybe like annoy some people. I would say Rome and Paris definitely, and I mean definitely, overshadow London. Okay. Don't come for me. Don't come for me. I don't care. I'm not going to read it. I don't care. Be mad. I don't mind. And this, the thing is, for any like idiots out there who are like actually upset by that take, it's not that I think there's anything wrong. By the way, it's just my opinion. So there's nothing like, there's no law being like put into place here. I just think personally, in my opinion, that Rome and Paris just own something. They own like a space on the planet in such a way that it cannot be described without seeing it. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true in my opinion. Like, there's something about Rome and Paris that I've never felt in any other place. And I'm the world's most insanely over-the-top advocate for, you know, going to New York or going to New Orleans. I love London. It's a lot of fun. But there's something about Rome and Paris that, like, I just don't feel in any other place. It's like one of the – it's a kind of city where you're like, oh, like, the world is so much richer, deeper, beautiful, complex, and invigorating than I ever thought it could be. It's Rome and Paris are the kind of cities where you go there and you're like, oh, I now, as like this monkey man, this just like meat sack who for some reason was cursed with consciousness, like feels a sense of purpose, because at least before I die, I can feel like the overwhelming wave of beauty. It's like that. It's just like the overwhelming existential look at the stars and cry sort of beauty, where you're like, I don't care like about anything else, but like this now, which is such a mantra for a lot of people, that helps them not overthink and to not overcomplicate nice moments, you know, just thinking those two words, this now. I mean, that's getting into psychology and stuff, but there's something so wonderful about those two cities. I can't really put it into words. And Paris just blew me away. It was really just so spectacular. I went to lunch at for the very first time ever, a single star, like Michelin restaurant, a Michelin star, and unbelievable. I'm not even going to go into like all the stuff that we had there, but it was, cause it's just kind of annoying for those who aren't really into that stuff, but it was the weirdest yet most fulfilling and exciting food I've probably ever had in my life. But I do have to say, and I was, you know, I've been open about this. My that was incredible, and I'm so grateful and thankful to have had the opportunity for that food. But my favorite place to eat in the entire, in all of the places that I had the pleasure of experiencing in Paris, the best place was this, you know, I, forgive me if I'm wrong, I would say Mexican cantina. It's very, you know, it was very Latin. It was very like South American. I would guess, just based on my experiences in the South with Mexican cuisine and the people, obviously, that it was Mexican ran, but it could be, you know, could have been anywhere. It could have been Guatemala. It could have been Puerto Rico. It could have been anywhere. It doesn't matter. There was a cantina that had just some of the, it was a tight, squeezed in little place that normally I would feel a bit stressed out about being inside of, because I'm a big guy and I get claustrophobic very fast. And also I found out like through the ADHD that when like scenarios or like locations change for me, that it makes sense why I get so stressed out about like needing some time to adjust to a new thing. That's off topic. Anyway, it's a very small place and it's a really, really, really cool place that reminds me a lot of New Orleans, and a lot of different places I've been to in the South that really focus on authenticity. So the staff, you know, were these, it was like a, I think it was like a mother, daughter. It could have been like, you know, cousin, it could have been aunt. Maybe they're just coworkers. Maybe they're not related, but there was something about the relationship they seemed to have where it felt familial. And our, you know, the waitress was probably like, I don't know, 27, 28. The other woman was maybe like 50 or late 40s. And then there was this one like really sweet, totally French black guy. And it was the best food. It was the best food. Oh man, that I've probably, it was probably the best food I've ever had in my life. I'm not even like being hyperbolic. I think it was the best food I've ever had in my life. Oh my God, dude, I'm thinking about it right now. I ordered like this thing called like the quesabarilla, which was like a combination of berria, which is a kind of, I mean, basically, you know, Mexican food. You know, it's kind of like carnitas or fajitas or it's like all that kind of style, right? It's all like whatever, but it combines in a certain way. And it was like, it came in a pair of twos, and it looked like, just for your eyes to imagine, it looked like if you'd squished a burrito into the shape of a quesadilla in a very, very good way. And it had like crispy cheese on the outside. And it was like with this great, really fresh beef and all these veggies, and with a sauce, like a, you know, when you go to like a sandwich shop and they give you like au jus on the side, like this dip. It was kind of like that. They had like a dip, like a broth. Oh my God. Oh my God. Efi had carnitas, and I was able to, my Spanish has diminished like to such an extra, like atrocious level of like garbage. But sadly, I really regret that I didn't keep up with that. And now German's taken up so much space in my head, but I felt so inspired, you know, by how good the food was and how nice the atmosphere was, that I got, some of the Spanish came back and I was able to like order and like, I mean, I wasn't having full blown conversations. I'm not like here to brag because I'm an idiot, but I was able to, you know, I could tell her first language was Spanish. That's why I knew the food was going to be good first off. But then I had that food. And then realized, oh, I actually do know the expression for this, you know, request or whatever in Spanish. So we had like a whole meal. We ordered a full-ass second meal. No joke. Like, for real. We ordered a full-ass second meal at this place. Like, straight up had just dinner again. It was so good. We just didn't care. Like, there was no thing of like, oh, I'm getting so full. It was like, should we get that again? Let's get that again and add some nachos. It was so insanely good. I cannot express enough how in love I was with this. Now, here's where things get interesting. So, I got to speak a little Spanish with the waitress. I felt cool. And then, you know, had this amazing food, drinking some Modelo Negra. And then I knew that, like, somewhere in this place, this tiny, tiny place that looks a bit like, Mom, you'll know, like the white trolley. It looks a bit like a small food truck. It was that small. I mean, I'm talking like crammed small. If the food hadn't been so great, I would have, you know, my claustrophobia would have been like, you have to get out of here. It was amazing. So I didn't care after the first bite. But that kind of space, we had learned that there was like a very, very cool bar. And it wasn't the food bar that we were seated at. It was like a bar somewhere else in this place. And I was like, where else can we go? This is the tiniest little joke of a venue. Like, I mean, the food's amazing, but like, where could a bar possibly be? And then we saw people lining up behind us. And I was like, where are they going? And then we found out that they were going to the bar. I looked behind me, and so nonchalant, so easy to overlook, there was just a little white door that blended in perfectly with the wall, almost like a villain's lair in James Bond or something. It was just like part of the wall, but you could see where handprints had opened the door like over and over and over for years and years. And I thought it was just like, I don't know, like some sort of spot that people have, you know, used for whatever reason, but it was actually a little door that pushes in. And you go in there, and then there's a little staircase. You go down, and it is a full-ass, like, underground bar that is so exquisite and prestigious. You'd think you're having margaritas in Bruce Wayne's cave. Like, it was so, not immaculate, like, not overwhelming to the point where you'd be like, I don't know if we can afford this, but so, like, polar opposite vibes of the place, the place 2 centimeters away, which was the like taco cantina that we were literally just sitting at. It blew me away that they could have a place like that. It was like, it was so extreme in indifference, like the vibe and the style and the decor. It was so extreme, you would think that it was like a Scorsese film where you go into like a dirty beat up laundromat, and then you open one of the dryers and crawl in, and it's a full ass casino with red, you know, velvet carpets. And it was such a huge difference. It did not feel legal, but it was just a really cool, normal bar. And the restaurant opened earlier than the bar, so that the reason I didn't even notice it was the bar wasn't open for so long, and then people were lining up behind us, and I was like, oh. And then the bill came after we had like 7,000 carnitas, and then we went inside this really, really, really cool bar, and there was plenty of seats. It was just beautiful, niche, quaint, you know, understated. It was just very cool. It was a very, very cool bar, and they had only a menu of like 6 drinks. It wasn't like you could go in there and say, I want, you know, an old fashioned, I want Coors Light or whatever. It was a menu of 6 drinks, 6 sort of like really nice, well-flavored pure liquor cocktails, like old fashioned style, but very, very specific drinks. And man, Efi and I, we found one each, like different ones each, that we just absolutely went crazy for. And she had, this is where the night gets funny, and then I'll stop with the birthday stuff, but she had, I think, like 3 of this one particular drink that she liked, which did taste good. It was like peach, something with peach and gin, I think. And I had something with whiskey that was trying to think of the combination. It was really sweet, but not overwhelmingly sweet, and it was like really classy. And apparently they changed the menu every single week. So we only, and that was like the last night of that menu. So we just, that was the last one we had a shot at. I had, no joke, like six of these guys. But in my defense, I mean, I'm not defending myself. It was my birthday. But in my defense, it was, imagine if you like put just like a shot into an adult's, like a, imagine you take a shot glass, right? Fill it up about, yeah, maybe full, and then you pour it into a whiskey glass, and it's, you know, just at the bottom, and then you put like a huge translucent square, you know, whiskey ice cube into it, how full it looks. So in my defense, I basically had, over time, by the way, not like immediately, but over time had like six, I would say like shots of this drink, because it was very, very small. But it was so delicious. And then we were drunk, but not like stumbling. It was more like giggly, which I like. I find that certain alcohols, have a different effect. I don't like being beer drunk, because beer drunk makes me like sloppy and like stumbly. And the first thing to go is always my mouth. Hate that. Couldn't hate anything more in terms of like when I don't have control over something on my body. Like I don't like that feeling. When I drink whiskey or gin or tequila, I still sound like I do now. But I mean, you can see in my eyes that I've had some drinks, and it's not as if I think I could drive, but it's just, I really, really don't like you had like four beers and I feel sober. But then you go to talk to someone and they're like, whoa, man, you're hammered. You're slaughtered. And I'm like, duh, I'm not, I only had three beers. It's the worst feeling. It's just the worst feeling. It's embarrassing, but also it's just like, I don't know, it's not worth it. Anyway, we had these drinks. It was really great. Beautiful, beautiful bar. Really, really cool. And so then, okay, so at the end of this evening, you know, Ify's all giggly, and I'm definitely, you know, floating from these cocktails. And then I get like the surprise of a lifetime, which is that she has booked a because my nerdy ass has been getting into sleight of hand magic recently to apparently repel women and cool people. She decided to book. She booked a comedy. I'm sorry. She booked a magic show. And just to put everything out there, put all the cards on the table, it ain't David Copperfield. Okay? It ain't David Blaine. Right? It's not Penn and Teller. It was not that cool. I'm not talking smack behind her back. It's not Ify's fault. We both laughed a lot about this show. I mean, let me just be honest here. Let me put like, you know, magic pun here. Let me put the cards on the table here. The magician, this woman, I forgot her name. She is very, very talented. As someone who like has always had like a love and an appreciation for great magic, and also like now kind of getting into learning how certain tricks are done. She was extremely skilled, so it's no shame about her ability. Like, she's very, very skilled, and there were some tricks where I was deeply, deeply impressed. However, she was so lame to watch, man. She was so tough. I mean, Ify knew it too. I don't like this thing about how magicians, can, like, they pick up like a persona they like create a persona, and then they just become like the lamest possible person. You know what I mean? They'd be like, I'm the amazing Randall. Oh, do you want to hear a story about how the pebble rolled down the hill? And then they pull the cards out, and like the cards represent like this pebble and like going down, like, well, the pebble went down. Where are you guys from? Are you guys from Canada? Oh, sorry about that. Sorry about that, buddy. Sorry, buddy. Where are you guys from? You guys from the States? Oh, MAGA. Cheeseburger. All right. Where are you guys from? Sweden? Hurgy-durgy-durgy-durgy. So anyway, the stone's rolling down the hill. And it's just like, just do the effing card trick. Do the job, man. Just show up and go, you guys want to see some cool magic? Yeah, here you go. Okay, how about this? Here's the card, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, whoopsie-daisy, it ain't that card. Isn't that cool? Be like, hell yeah, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, just say what you're doing. Like, I mean, I don't mean, like, explain the trick, obviously. That's the magician's code. But, like, just be cool. Magicians always wear, like, This lady, she wore like a glitter, like, oh my god, dude, I'm just reliving it. She wore like a Temu magician's glitter vest with a stupid fedora that was like made of plastic. And I was watching her hands. I was like, oh, I can appreciate skill. Like, wow. Okay. Ooh, that's really good. She's really smooth. But then she would just cheese it up like a ballpark hot dog. So horribly. Like a plate of nachos at a Malco cinema. She cheesed it up where I would actively lose interest in being in that room. And the thing was, it was in a basement. And there was no way to, like, you can't leave. If I had to vomit or pee so bad that I was bursting, I might have been able to get the courage to do it. But the thing is, it's a small room. Everyone sees everyone. She sees everyone all the time. You're in a basement. You have to go to a door that's like leaving an American high school with the push bar, like, you know? I didn't have the courage to do it. So I actively like hated her. Well, I hated her persona, her fake persona, because I was like, part of me was like, choose better. Like, pick a better character and don't be such a cheese ball. Like, don't be such a Cheez-It cracker that I don't want to watch your show. And then she tried to force Ernesty into her show. Like, and my father started this theater years ago. And part of you is like, she's paying homage to her father, who was a magician, and he opened this theater, and now she's running it all these years later. Again, like, sincerely a beautiful story, and I'm so happy for her and happy that she can, like, you know, continue the legacy that he began. She did it at the worst time and shoved it down our throats like we were dogs who have to be fed meds in a spoonful of peanut butter. It was like, here you go. Here you go. Here's an extreme lack of subtlety because you're a dog and you won't know any better and you don't care. It was just like, my God, can you do this with some... Can you work with someone who has the slightest concept of a narrative? Work with... Go to one friend who just likes movies a lot. And just be like, what do you think would be the best way to introduce like a narrative into my show that would, you know, amplify the meaning behind my final trick, you know, because I want to make them cry, you know. I really disliked her, and Ify too, really disliked her choice, her fake persona. But again, at the end of the day, respect where respect is due. She is a very, very good magician. And of course, because it's me, I think you guys were probably expecting this part. Of course, because it's me, I got pulled on set. I got pulled on stage. I did. Did I regret it wholeheartedly immediately?
Yes.
Do I think I did an okay job keeping my keeping my composure and making the room laugh? Yes, because I'm an attention whore. There's a balance, right? Like, I am an attention whore, and I also understand that it's her show, and to not be a dick, to not not demand attention from the crowd, but to not I still got to be a little funny. I still have to be a little bit of an attention whore, but I don't want to disrupt her work. You know, I think that's a big difference. There's when you see people go on stage, either they're shy and quiet and they kind of just go along with whatever and don't say much, which is the standard. And then there's people who are I'm the funny friend in my group. And then they just trample over everything that the performer's saying and almost in a sense ruin the vibe. I did not want to be that guy. So she pulled me on stage and she said, okay, for this trick, I need Jordan, blah, blah, blah. She did her jokes, and then she was like, okay, here's a roll of standard, elementary school scotch tape, right? It's just the plastic ring with the little ridged end scotch tape. And she's like, we're going to race. We're going to see who can put a piece of scotch tape on each of their fingers on one hand, peel, rip, stick, peel, rip, stick. Who can do that the fastest, wins. And I thought there was going to be some sort of illusion to this trick. Maybe this was a rigged roll of scotch tape. No, it was just set up for her trick. She legitimately wanted me to race her. And thankfully, I just finished this tour. So I was very comfortable being in front of all these people, even though I really didn't want to be up there. And she gave me this scotch tape and it was like, go. And it was like, my hands were so sweaty in just the absolute worst way. It was just peel scotch tape. I put it on my index finger. It falls. And I was able to make it funny. I was verbal oh my God, no, it's rigged. It's all, and the people were laughing. So I was having a good time. But she did it and she legitimately did it. It wasn't even part of her trick yet. It was just set up for something else. And I put all the tape, I tried to put all the tape on, failed every single time. I think at the end of 30 seconds, which felt like hours, I had two pieces of tape on, which is I'm not the smartest man, but I'm not slow. You know what I mean? I knew the task, but I was just too sweaty. Everything just fell off. I thought at first that the tape was rigged, but, then she looked over, she got a big laugh out of it. Plenty of people do this trick probably, or the people in the audience go up there and they're sweaty from nerves and it doesn't work. And I mean, it's a funny bit. So, I'm sure she planned for that. And then she said, okay, you can sit down. She gave me a roll of scotch tape as a gift, which I just immediately, I think I gave it to somebody or put it in a bag somewhere. And then she was like, okay, sit down. And they applauded as you do for a guest on stage. And then the cool thing was she then, made her story or her joke or whatever her theme was about the tape and put all of the tape from her fingers into rolled them into a ball. And then she pulled the ball apart. And as you can imagine, since it's a magic show, all of the little pieces that she had on her fingers were now magically one long piece of tape, magically. And it was great. I was honestly she was so annoying to listen talk. She was so annoying to be around. Just I feel like she would be someone that if I went to school with her, I would avoid her at all costs. But she's clearly extraordinarily talented at what she does. I'm getting to an age now. I'm getting to a point in my life where it's look, I cannot like somebody, but I can still respect, admire, and appreciate what effort they put into their their work, you know? I mean, my God, like, you can separate those things. So hats off to that lady. She's a very good magician and perhaps the world's most annoying human otherwise. But, you know, she's a performer like me, and for God's sakes, we sure can be annoying, aching for the approval of others. But yeah, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. I had a great time in Paris, had a very fun trip, very good food, as we talked about. I'm into sleight-of-hand magic now, and I'm literally using adult markers to color in a horror coloring book because I am 11. Again, if you haven't checked out my book, go to the link in the bio and the show notes. Get that book. The tour is over, but it's going to be on YouTube next month for free, so subscribe to me on YouTube if you haven't already. And I love you. Take care.
Look out, baby. The saints are coming through, and it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.